I know she feels better that it's out in the open. It isn't my forgiveness she needs, or even God's. Lindy has to learn to forgive herself. Leslie Knowles. From Cole Greenberg. To Leslie Knowles. Sent March 15, 1993. Subject: Welcome to the World Wide Web. March 15, 1993. Dear Leslie, I'm glad you finally took my advice and came online. You'll find Prodigy a great way for us to keep in contact. I'm still in Waco, waiting out this David Koresh mess. The place is swarming with ATF officials. Talking to them, I get the feeling they don't know what the hell they're doing. This has the potential to blow up in everyone's faces if it isn't dealt with properly. I can't say for sure when I'll be able to see you again. Soon, I hope. What's this about your needing surgery? It isn't serious, is it? Let me know when, and I'll work my schedule around it so I can be with you. Don't worry. You don't need to spell out your problems with Lindy. You've been incredibly patient with her. Every kid makes mistakes. I certainly made my share. I've got to go. Stay in touch, and thank David for me for setting you up with this computer system. It'll save us both a mint in long-distance calls. Bye for now. Cole.
April 19th, 1993. Mom. Mr. Harmon phoned and wanted to know if you're interested in seeing Kiss of the Spider-Woman with him. I told him you were. Give him a call otherwise, but he's getting really great seats. I was sure you'd want to go. Wake me up if you have any questions. Oh, he got the tickets for next Friday night. Love ya. Lenny Joe.
Leslie Knowles. April 20th, 1993. Dear Dr. Milton, just a note to thank you for taking me to lunch for Secretary's Day. This was an unexpected surprise since I'm not your secretary. The lunch, in addition to the flowers, means a great deal to me. You've been a wonderful employer. I want you to know I appreciate my job and am grateful you took a chance by hiring me all those years ago. Your encouragement and belief in me saw me through the lean times. Without the flexible hours you willingly gave me, I might never have been able to obtain my degree. Sincerely, Leslie Knowles.
Leslie Knowles. From Cole Greenberg. To Leslie Knowles. Sent April 21, 1993. Subject: Please forgive me. Dear Leslie, I'm sure you understand why I had to break our date. This whole Waco mess went crazy. If you caught my report, you saw what happened. It was like being in the middle of a war zone. I've seen just about everything in my career, but this tops it. Heads are going to roll on account of this, mark my words. So, I've got competition. The good doctor took you to lunch, did he? That's interesting. A fancy French restaurant, huh? You aren't even his secretary. What gives?
Cole.
Cole Greenberg. From Leslie Knowles. To Cole Greenberg. Sent April 22, 1993. Subject: You and me. Dear Cole, you're jealous. I love it. It's almost as if you and Jillian are comparing notes. She sent me a message and wanted to know if there was anything romantic developing between Dr. Milton and me. I want to reassure you both. No. I'd never be able to look at him as anyone other than Dr. Milton. I couldn't even begin to think of him in any romantic way. He's my employer, so stop. Lindy was over this evening and we talked again. Our relationship is on more solid ground now, although I ache for her and the poor choices she's made. Let me know when you're able to visit again. It's been almost 4 months since I last saw you. Love, Leslie.
Bench and Bar Association Newsletter. Notice from Judge Jillian Lawton Gordon. Dear members of the Bench and Bar, I'd like to announce that after careful consideration, I have decided not to seek re-election. I want to thank you for your continued support over the years. I eagerly anticipate traveling and spending time with my daughter. Most sincerely, Judge Jillian Lawton Gordon.
Leslie Knowles. From Cole Greenberg. To Leslie Knowles. Sent July 1, 1993. Subject: I miss you. Dear Leslie, are you sure you can't get away and join me here in Hong Kong? What about San Francisco? I'll be landing there on the 5th. Want to meet me there for one day? I'd stay longer, but I've got to get back to New York. I've booked an interview with Vince Foster for early in the week. It seems I'm always having to apologize, doesn't it? Be patient with me, sweetheart. I was crazy about you nearly 30 years ago, and nothing has changed. Cole.
Dear Mrs. Gordon, thank you for the $25 for my birthday. I'm going to buy a Nirvana tape. I especially liked your letter. Mom told me that you used to date my Uncle Nick, but I didn't know he had a motorcycle and that he took you to the prom on the back of it, except you didn't really go to the prom. I think it's much more romantic that you danced under the stars at the football stadium. Is it the same stadium that's in Pine Ridge now? Mom and Dad have a framed photograph of Uncle Nick in his army uniform over the fireplace. I've always thought of that as just a picture of someone who died before I was born. Now he's a real person to me, and it makes me wish he hadn't died in Vietnam. I wish I'd known him. Thank you for the snapshot of you and my Uncle Nick together. You looked different then, didn't you? I showed the picture to my best friend Jennifer and explained that I was named after the two of you, Nikki for my Uncle Nick and Lynn because it's your middle name. Dad said you're going to retire this year. Jennifer told me her grandfather just retired and he's coming to visit her. When you retire, does that mean you'll be coming to Pine Ridge soon? I'd really like to see you. Dad said you're the only real family he has left, and you aren't technically family. He says you are family, though, because you loved Uncle Nick and he loved you back. Thanks again for the birthday money and for your letter. Love, Nikki Lynn Murphy.
Leslie Knowles. From Jillian Gordon to Leslie Knowles. Sent August 10th, 1993. Subject, my visit. Dear Leslie, my last day on the bench is October 1st, so if you can schedule your surgery after that, I'll be available to come and spend time with you. I know Lindy will be there and the boys too, but they're kids. And do you seriously think you can count on Cole to show up? Hasn't he broken the last 5 dates he's made with you? Okay, 3. But you get the picture. Actually, I'm the one who's beginning to get the picture. Let me know what you decide. Jillian. September 1st, 1993. Happy birthday, Mom. Here's the news you've been waiting for. Due March 17th, 1994. Your first grandchild. Sponsored by David and Megan Knowles. Sales receipt. Linda's Knitting Needles. Pine Ridge, Washington. 6 50-gram balls at $4.25. Baby blanket book, $5.95. Tax, 8.1%. Total, $34. Check, number 1299 for $34.
Leslie Knowles. From Cole Greenberg to Leslie Knowles. Sent, October 4th, 1993. Subject, Michael Jordan. Dearest Leslie, I've got an interview scheduled with Michael Jordan for October 6th. He's about to make one of the biggest announcements of his career, and he's agreed to speak to me first. Are you curious? I'm going to make a stab at guessing what he's going to say. Let's see how close I am. He's planning to retire from basketball and try his hand at baseball. Mind you, this is pure speculation on my part, but we shall see. I know, I'm supposed to be in Pine Ridge right after that, and I will be. I'm flying in on October 7th, and we'll spend 3 whole glorious weeks together. I'll see you again the following month. Thank you for understanding that I've got to be in D.C. to cover the November 2nd elections. But I know Jillian's arriving November 3rd, and the surgery is scheduled for the 5th. I'll be at the hospital when you come out of the anesthesia. Love, Cole. P.S. If Michael Jordan commits suicide the day before I interview him the way Vince Foster did, I'm leaping off a bridge myself. As it is, I'll go to my grave wondering what Foster might have told me.
November 1st, 1993. Dear Jillian, I know you're busy packing for your flight to Seattle, but I wanted to let you know that I'll miss you while you're gone. I understand Lenny Joe is staying with your mother. I'll make a point of checking up on the two of them while you're away. If there's anything you need, don't be afraid to ask. Sincerely, Gary Harmon. P.S. I'm on Prodigy if you want to get in touch via the computer.
Leslie Knowles. November 10th, 1993. Dear Stephen, it's going to take me a while to think of you as Stephen and not Dr. Milton, but in time it will be more natural for both of us. Thank you for the huge and very beautiful bouquet of flowers.
I don't think I've ever seen a more gorgeous arrangement. Having you there at my bedside when I came out of the anesthetic was one of the more pleasant elements of this ordeal. I appreciate your answering Jillian's middle-of-the-night questions, too. I suspected I'd developed a bladder infection following the surgery, but she wanted confirmation. You'll have to forgive my friend. She was convinced it might have been something serious. You were the one person she felt she could contact any time of the day or night. Jillian returns to New York the first of next week, and I'll be back to work directly after Thanksgiving. Thank you again for the flowers. Sincerely, Leslie. P.S. You're welcome to visit any time. Also, if there's a question relating to matters at the office, I'm available.
Gary Harmon. From Jillian Gordon. To Gary Harmon. Sent November 11th, 1993. Subject. I'm coming home.
Dear Gary, thanks for keeping tabs on my mother and Lenny Joe. I knew they'd be perfectly fine without me, but it helps knowing there was someone in the building they could call if they needed anything. My friend is recuperating nicely. I'm flying home early Saturday morning. This has been a very satisfactory trip in a number of ways. As I explained earlier, I was born and raised in Pine Ridge, so needless to say, this town has a lot of memories for me, most of them good. I saw several old friends and visited with people I hadn't seen in years. I have a special friend, a 12-year-old who was named after me. We spent some time together and she's completely captured my heart. I'll tell you more about her one day. Equally interesting is watching the action between the two men vying for Leslie's attention. Cole is a longtime friend. Leslie and Cole renewed their acquaintance a couple of years ago. You've probably heard of him. CNN correspondent Cole Greenberg. He was scheduled to spend 3 weeks with Leslie. He managed to stay all of 5 days, left in a rush to cover some big story in Washington, D.C., and then came back the day of the surgery. His flight, however, got delayed, and he didn't reach the hospital until Leslie was in recovery. Act 1, Scene 2. Enter Dr. Milton. Dr. Stephen Milton, widower. Leslie has worked with him for years. He's all around wonderful. Leslie has frequently told me what a good husband and father he is. Stable, secure, dedicated. He invited Leslie to lunch for Secretary's Day last April, and lo and behold, he was at the hospital during her surgery. In fact, he was holding her hand when she came out of the anesthesia. Cole wasn't there, but Stephen was. You get my point? So does Leslie. More importantly, so does Cole. He sent her flowers every day since. Flowers, cards, candy. I wouldn't be surprised if, after leaving her dangling for the last 2 years, he finally found the courage to propose. This visit to Pine Ridge has been wonderful, but I'll be happy to get home again. Don't you dare come to the airport. I'll grab a taxi. Yes, let's definitely do dinner. I'll look forward to it. See you very soon. Jillian.
Cole Greenberg. From Leslie Knowles to Cole Greenberg. Sent November 28, 1993. Subject, you and me.
Dear Cole, this isn't an easy message to send. It would probably be better if I wrote it as a letter, but I never know when you and the mail will connect. Besides, if I sent it through the news office, it could take weeks, and there's no telling how many other people would have an opportunity to read it. This isn't perfect, but it's the best I can do. Your friendship over the past 3 years has meant a great deal to me. When I contacted you again in 1991, I was surprised to learn you weren't married. Now I understand why. Your career keeps you too busy for a wife or even a relationship. During my recent surgery, I had the opportunity to spend time with someone I've known and worked with for many years. I've admired and respected him from the very beginning. His wife died almost 3 years ago, and he deeply grieved her passing. But he's only 56, young enough to want love and companionship. On Thanksgiving evening, Stephen came to the house to talk about us. He was sincere and forthright, and he asked if it was possible for us to date. He didn't want to intrude if you and I were serious. Are we serious, Cole? I don't believe we are. We're each holding on to the other because of a fantasy we created nearly 30 years ago on a Hawaiian beach. If this relationship meant as much as it should, we would have found a way to be together. I'm not blaming you. I've been equally at fault. I was just as content to send emails as you were. We often went months without seeing each other. I took a few days to think about Stephen's question, and I'm ready to answer him now. I'm ready to tell him that you and I are the very best of friends, but that's all there is to the relationship. I'm fairly confident that once Stephen and I start dating, we'll eventually get married. I might be taking a lot for granted, but I know him and I know how he thinks. He wouldn't ask to date me if he wasn't considering a long-term relationship. We both have grown children. We're comfortable with each other and we share the same values. In all honesty, I'm a little shocked by the strength of my feelings for him. I guess the foundation was always there, and now the circumstances are appropriate and right. You've been a good friend to me, Cole. Thank you for that, and for your love, generosity, and support. I wouldn't do anything in the world to hurt you. But I think you know as well as I do that while we made very good friends, we were never meant to be lovers. Thank you for understanding. Leslie.
1997. Jillian's Journal. January 1st, 1997. The 90s are speeding by so quickly. It seems I barely turned the calendar page to a new year and three more have slipped through my fingers. They've been eventful years, though, dealing with retirement, helping Lenny Joe prepare for college, then losing Mom. I still miss my mother. Her death caught both Lenny Joe and me by surprise. It's almost 2 years since she died peacefully in her sleep. Lenny Joe took it particularly hard. Mom's mental and physical health had started to deteriorate rapidly after her 80th birthday. I knew how desperately she wanted to remain in her own home. The decision to place her in a retirement center hung over my head, and I delayed making it as long as possible. Even with her diminished capacity, Mom was well aware of her surroundings, and I simply couldn't take her away from everything that was familiar and comfortable to her. Not until there was no longer any choice did I move her to a nursing home. As it turned out, that was very near the end. I can't say her death was a blessing, but as always, my mother's timing was impeccable. I miss her so very much. Lenny Joe loves Radcliffe. It's her first year away from home, and I worry about her. But my daughter is certainly capable of forging her own path. She's let me know she isn't interested in practicing law, which doesn't hurt my feelings. She's talented and artistic, and has no idea what she wants to be or do with her life. At 18, she has plenty of time to figure it out. I'm grateful we're so close. We talk either by phone or email practically every day. I'm in frequent touch with Leslie, too. It almost feels as if we're back in high school, passing notes back and forth during class. Gary Harmon and I continue to date, but not seriously. He'd like to make the relationship permanent, but I'm not interested in remarrying, which has been a disappointment to him. I'm glad we can be honest with each other. Last year, he explained that he didn't intend to live the rest of his life alone, and then in June, he started seeing another woman. To be honest, I was unsettled for a while, but accepted that I was about to lose my dearest male friend. Apparently, the relationship didn't work out, and Gary and I are back together. We enjoy the same things, travel occasionally, and are good companions. However, despite his preferences, this isn't a romantic relationship. Perhaps one day that'll change. I can't say for sure. For now, I'm in a good place, emotionally and physically. With the Dow Jones heading toward 7,000, the investments Monty made for me have grown substantially. The ones I made for myself have done equally well. Whether credit should go to the Democrats or the Republicans is hard to judge. Dad, I know you have strong opinions on the subject, but I am not up to arguing the point. Not on such a glorious day, the first of a new year. If I were looking for an omen, I'd point to Hale-Bopp, which has proven to be a truly majestic comet visible to the naked eye. I was excited about the return of Halley's Comet back in 1991. All that news coverage, and then what a disappointment. But Hale-Bopp is supposed to be incredible, and since it won't return until the year 4397, this is truly a once-in-a-lifetime event. Leslie and Stephen have been married nearly 2 years, and I can't recall any time in her life that she's been happier. I love Stephen myself for being so wonderful to my dearest friend. They enjoy traveling and are constantly going here and there, especially now that he's taken on a partner and reduced his hours. No one seeing them together for the first time would guess that they're practically newlyweds. They know each other so well, it's as though they've been married their entire lives. Leslie took up golf, and to her husband's delight, shows a real knack for it. Stephen has been the father to her children that Buck was never capable of being. The boys idolize him, and he's managed to gain Lindy's respect simply because of the way he loves Leslie. At first I thought there might be a problem with his own daughters, but both have accepted Leslie, and despite a few rough spots after they first started dating, everything's worked out on both sides. Stephen hopes to retire completely in the year 2000, and he and Leslie plan to spend a month in Central America treating the sick. They're going as part of a volunteer group, and I applaud their compassion and generosity. My own involvement will, however, be limited to a financial contribution. David and Megan are parents two times over, and Doug is married too. I briefly met his wife at their wedding last October. Leslie thinks the world of Julie. Thankfully, Lindy's had a turnaround. I don't know exactly what happened, but almost overnight, she went from being a rebellious, self-centered thorn in her mother's side to a responsible, well-adjusted adult. She's seriously dating a man any mother would love and, after much soul-searching, dropped out of school and accepted a position as a bookkeeper at Microsoft. David recommended her for the job, but she was hired and promoted on her own merit. Christopher surprised everyone and became a teacher. He's working with junior high kids who absolutely love him. Our children are all settled and doing well. These have been the best years of Leslie's life. Mine too, in some ways. This day, I will marry my best friend, the one I laugh with, live for, and dream with. We invite you to be with us as we begin our lives together. Lindy Knowles and Jordan Kevin Parker, June 7th, 1997. 2 p.m., Highline Christian Church, 2189 33rd Avenue Southeast, Pine Ridge, Washington. Reception immediately following. RSVP. Lindy Knowles, February 10, 1997. Dear Dad, I'm sending this to the last address I have for you, and that's care of your parole officer in Texas. No one's heard from you in a long time, 2 years at least. I want you to know I'm getting married in June to a truly wonderful man. We met last year here at Microsoft and started dating in September. I knew Jordan was the man I wanted to marry almost right away. Oh, Daddy, I'm so in love with him. I took my time deciding on marriage, didn't I? Jordan's 31 and has never been married either. The funny part is, I probably wouldn't have given him a second look a few years back. He's everything I was sure I didn't want. Successful, sane, and sober. 3 years ago, I was dating losers. I attracted men more interested in drugs and alcohol than in me. Men I thought I could save from themselves. It wasn't until after I found out I was pregnant and had an abortion that I realized it wasn't them I was trying to save. I wanted to save you. I so wanted my father back that I was seeking out men just like you to redeem. Thankfully, I woke up before I ruined my life. I know this sounds critical of you. I don't mean to come across as harsh or judgmental. That's not my intention. The entire reason for this letter is to invite you to Jordan's and my wedding. I'd really like you to be there, Dad, and I'm giving you plenty of time to figure out a way to arrange it. If you need me to send you the money, then I'll do it. This is going to be a very important day for me, and I want you to witness the fact that I've grown up and chosen my life partner well. I'm eager for you to meet Jordan and get to know him. As far as I'm concerned, none of the past matters anymore. You've made mistakes, and so have I. Everyone's always told me that I'm the Knowles kid most like you. Well, I want to show you that I'm capable of living a good life. If you see how happy I am, then maybe you can find that same serenity yourself. Here I go again, trying to save you. But that's all right, because I took care of myself first this time.
I love you despite your problems and your weaknesses. Please let me hear from you either way. It would be good just to know you're all right. Lindy.
East Side Imaging. 30 East 60th Street, New York, New York, 10021. February 17, 1997. Dear Mrs. Jillian Gordon, Dr. Wilson has had the opportunity to review the X-ray from your mammogram. We request that you make an appointment with your gynecologist at your earliest convenience. Sincerely, Ruth Carey, RN.
Jillian Gordon. From Lenny Joe Gordon to Jillian Gordon. Sent February 27, 1997. Subject, I'm coming home. Mom, what do you mean it looks like you need surgery? You can't just drop something like that on me. This has to do with that lump in your breast, doesn't it? The one they found on your mammogram. I don't care what you say, I'm coming home for the surgery. Have you told Aunt Leslie yet? Let me know the day and I'll make the arrangements immediately. Oh, and Mom, I know now probably isn't the time to mention this, but I've met someone totally awesome. I'll give you more details later. Love you. Lenny Joe.
Jillian's Journal, March 20th, 1997. The hospital released me this morning, and it feels wonderful to be back in my own home. I'm very weak, and both Leslie and Lenny Joe seemed to sense it. They put me to bed, ordering me to take a nap. Actually, I'm grateful, and I relish these moments alone so I can record what happened while it's still fresh in my mind. The surgery, which is so common among women, should have been routine. But for whatever reason, there were complications with the anesthetic. In fact, Dr. Wilson, the surgeon, told Lenny Joe and Leslie that I nearly died on the operating table. I think I must have, because I had the most incredible, lifelike dream. The last thing I remember was looking at the anesthesiologist. She smiled at me and said calmly that everything would be over before I knew it. I closed my eyes, and that was when Nick came to me. I was so astonished to see him that I didn't know what to think. It was as though I was 18 years old again. And Nick, with that cocky, sexy grin of his, looked just as he did 31 years ago. He took my hand and all the feelings I had when we first met came back, flooding me with a surge of unadulterated joy. Then he sat down, my hand in his, and started talking. It was as if he'd been with me all these years. He talked to me about Monty, about the child I miscarried, about Lenny Joe and her future. He told me he was pleased I'd made my peace with God. He reminded me that he had too in the worst of Vietnam. I kept telling him this couldn't be happening. His response to that was a soft laugh. Then he raised my hand to his lips and kissed it. He told me he'd been waiting for me all this time, but that he was content to wait a while longer. I've tried to remember as much of our conversation as I can, but I've already lost part of it. What I do recall is that Nick reminded me how much he loves me, even now. He's been dead nearly 29 years, and he loves me as much as he did when we were teenagers. What's so astounding, he said, is that the power of love is stronger than any force known to man. Stronger than anyone has ever imagined. Love is strong enough to stretch from one world to the next, through all of time and through eternity. Stronger than life and stronger than death. Nick assured me that when it was my turn to join him, he'd be waiting for me, along with my parents and Monty, and his dad, too. After that, he said he had to go. I protested and pleaded with him to stay, but he shook his head and told me not yet. Then he was gone. The next thing I remember, I was awake in the recovery room. Later, after I'd been moved to my room, I asked to speak to the anesthesiologist. When she arrived, I questioned her about people reporting lifelike dreams during surgery. She assured me that it was a common thing and not to give it a second thought. I can't do that. I refused to dismiss this so lightly. That time with Nick was as real as my daughter and my best friend on the other side of this bedroom door. As real as my love for Nick. I want to believe it was real. I've held the memory of that time close to my heart ever since the surgery, letting his words warm my spirit and encourage me. Far-fetched as this sounds, all my fears about death have faded away to nothing.
Death no longer holds any dread for me. Discovering I had cancer shook me. For Lenny Joe's sake, I tried to hide how frightened I've been. I wasn't afraid for myself as much as her. I can't bear the thought of leaving my only child an orphan at 18. She still needs me. I'm tired now. This is only part of the ordeal in confronting the cancer. Next, I have chemotherapy and radiation treatments. I'm prepared to lose my hair and my dignity. They seem minor compared to the loss of my breast and the possible loss of my life. It helps that I'm surrounded by those who love me, in this world and the next.
Stephen Milton. From Leslie Milton to Stephen Milton. Sent March 23, 1997. Subject: Update on Jillian. My dearest Stephen, I thought I'd check in before I go to bed. Jillian is doing well. Her chemotherapy starts almost immediately, and she assures me she's ready. She's been so calm through all this, so serene and peaceful. Her friend Gary has been wonderful and is completely devoted to her. It's obvious that he loves her. I know he'd like to marry her, but he didn't bring up the subject and neither did I. I was worried about her getting to and from the hospital for her treatments, but Gary plans to provide the transportation and stay with her. That's a great relief to both Lenny Joe and me. Lenny Joe heads back to school at the end of next week. I'm grateful to have had this time with Jillian. We came so close to losing her during the surgery. I don't think she knows how very close it was. I know you're curious and a bit uncomfortable about my seeing Cole, so I want to reassure you on that score, too. Cole and I did have dinner, and it was good to see him again. He looks well and happy. He's retiring June 1st, but I'll believe it when I see it. He's too much of a workaholic. As we chatted over a glass of wine, I realized we don't have much in common. We never really did. Part of what I saw in him, what attracted me most, was his insight into world events. I encouraged him when he retires to write about Vietnam and the changes since then. I told him he could be the Stephen Ambrose of our generation. He thanked me for that and said it wasn't the first time he'd thought of becoming a writer. I hope he does. One benefit of my stay is that I found the most beautiful pearl necklace for Lindy's wedding. What a thoughtful husband you are to think of such a lovely gift for my daughter on her wedding day. I'll be home soon, my love. I miss you so much. Leslie.
March 30th, 1997. Dearest Aunt Jillian, I hope you're home from the hospital and feeling better now. Will you still be visiting Pine Ridge for your friend's daughter's wedding in June? I hope so. It would be cool to see you again. It's always good to see you. I'm taking driver's education and should have my license by then, so if you need a ride anywhere, just say the word. I'd love to be your chauffeur. Your niece, Nikki Lynn Murphy. P.S. Mom and Dad send their love.
Peter Punch, Texas Parole Board. 2190 Turtle Creek Road, Fort Worth, Texas. 76105. April 5th, 1997. Dear Lindy Knowles, I'm writing in response to your query concerning the whereabouts of your father, David Buck Knowles. My last contact with him was in April 1996. I regret to inform you that he died in a homeless shelter in November of last year. He was cremated by the city of Fort Worth. Sincerely, Peter Punch.
Leslie Milton. From Jillian Gordon to Leslie Milton. Sent April 25, 1997. Subject, Buck. Dearest Leslie, I'm sorry to hear the news about Buck, but as you said, it's not really a shock. What a terrible way for Lindy to find out about her father's death. The boys might have reacted with more nonchalance, but I agree with you. It's bound to have an impact on them. What about you, Leslie? You must have felt something, too. You were married to Buck for a lot of years, and he is the father of your children. If you need to talk this out, give me a call. Have you been watching the news from Grand Forks, North Dakota? Those poor people. The town was half underwater and everything that wasn't submerged was on fire. I happened to catch the CNN newscast, and you'll never guess who was reporting. Didn't you say Cole was retiring this year? Well, it appears he decided to hold off for a while. Same as you, I'll believe he's retired when I see it. I'm feeling much better, thank you.
Tell Lindy I wouldn't miss her wedding for the world. I sure as hell am not going to let a little thing like cancer keep me away. I haven't met Lenny Joe's male friend yet. Leave it to my level-headed daughter to fall in love with an unemployed musician. I'm getting a taste of what my parents must have thought when I announced that I was in love with Nick and wanted to marry him. Nick, however, was employed. Paul Robbins isn't. I'll give you more details about this Bob Dylan wannabe when I hear them. I suppose it could be worse. Love, Jillian.
Leslie's Journal, June 6, 1997.
In a few hours, Stephen will escort my daughter down the church aisle, and Lindy will marry a good and wonderful man. I couldn't have found anyone better suited for her had I launched my own search. It's so clear to me that God's hand is on her and on this marriage. Despite my certainty and happiness about the wedding, I'm a mass of nerves. I suppose every mother of the bride feels that way. Lindy's wedding, the conviction of Timothy McVeigh for the horrible bombing in Oklahoma City a couple of years ago, and the news of Buck's death are all keeping me awake. In light of all the bad news in this world, my ex-husband's death seems insignificant. Buck and I had been divorced more years than we were ever married, yet the news of his death hit me hard. It's understandable, I suppose. I loved Buck at one time, and he fathered all four of my children. How I wish his life could have been different. I want it better for him. Even after all the heartache and grief he brought me, I still had some feelings for Buck. I didn't believe it until Jillian asked me how I was taking the news. As I read her email, the tears started to drip down my face. Once I started crying, I couldn't stop for the longest time. What upset me so badly, I think, is that Buck had completely disassociated himself from the children and me. We didn't even know when he died. There was nothing on his person, nothing he carried with him to link him to us. The letter stated that he lived in a homeless shelter. I find that difficult to accept. The father of my children had sunk so low that he could no longer function in society. All I can say is I hope he found peace in death, because it was sadly missing from his life. The boys accepted the news without any open display of emotion. Christopher was so young when we divorced that he barely remembers Buck. David and Doug and Lindy remember him, though. All her life, Lindy's made excuses for her father. All her life, she defended him to her brothers and me. When she brought me the letter from Buck's parole officer, her face was expressionless, as if she'd always known it would come to this, in spite of her hope that his life could be salvaged. I'm grateful Jordan was with her when she opened the envelope. She's going to be all right, I think, and so am I. Within a few hours, my daughter will be Jordan's wife. Stephen will fill in as her father. She was the one who made the request that he walk her down the aisle. I know that meant a great deal to him. For a long time, Lindy made it abundantly clear that she never wanted me to remarry. She still held out hope that Buck and I would reconcile. My little girl has done a lot of growing up in the past few years, and I'm very, very proud of her. As a matter of interest, Cole Greenberg reported the news of the Timothy McVeigh trial. I don't think he'll ever retire. He's just not the type. I did notice something interesting, however. He's no longer with CNN. I saw him on the Fox News Channel. I wonder what that's all about. Paul Robbins. From Lenny Joe Gordon to Paul Robbins. Sent June 8, 1997. Subject, Lindy's wedding. Dearest Paul, the wedding was so romantic. Lindy was a beautiful bride. My mom had tears in her eyes when Lindy walked down the aisle. I can only imagine Mom's reaction when she hears about you and me. No, I haven't told her that we plan to get married next year. Not yet. It'd freak her out. This being apart is awful. I miss you, too, and I promise to email you every day I'm in Washington State. Love, Lenny Joe.
September 15th, 1997. Dear Mom and Stephen, Julie and I want to invite you to dinner next week if you're available. We have a surprise for you both. Mom, it's time to bring out those knitting needles again. I hope you're planning on being around in February. Love, Doug and Julie.
Jillian's Journal. November 20th, 1997. Dearest Nick, it's been years since I last wrote you.
I gave it up shortly after Monty died, but since my surgery and the dream, I feel closer to you than ever. Each night as I settle my head on the pillow and close my eyes, it's almost as if you're there with me. My mind is filled with thoughts of you. The dream keeps playing back in my mind. What you said, what you implied, what you promised. I've held on to as much of it as I could. I used to be so impatient. That's been an unexpected benefit of having cancer. I've developed a whole new perspective on the meaning of time. Things that seemed terribly important a year ago have faded in significance, and vice versa. I've learned that small things matter. The moment of laughter, the beauty of autumn leaves, the sensation of wind on my face. You know what I mean, don't you? I think a lot of people have felt that way since Princess Diana died. The news of her death touched everyone. There's been an almost unprecedented outpouring of grief worldwide. It seems as though people needed that collective release of emotion, as though this was more than a response to one individual death. The world is vastly different from the one you left behind. Everything happens at the speed of light. The internet is capable of far more than relaying messages. People are online for every conceivable reason. There's even this site where people can auction items and you wouldn't believe what's being sold. War medals, which bothers me and would no doubt upset you as well. Elvis albums, even Texaco signs from the 50s. This year a sheep was cloned and just yesterday, a 29-year-old woman gave birth to 7 children. Our lives are being affected every day by scientific and technological change, and that is ever constant. Still, the one thing that remains steadfast through everything is love. That's the message you gave me, isn't it? Lenny Jo is head over heels in love, and I'm biting my tongue to keep from saying things I shouldn't. I wanted someone a little more sensible, more stable than this musician. Paul is very sweet and talented, but he isn't exactly brimming with ambition. Just tonight, Lenny Jo phoned to tell me they want to get married. I tried to remain calm, but I'm not sure how successful I was. Thankfully, she promised not to do anything until we've had a chance to talk. I'd be a whole lot more comfortable if Paul had a job. Then I think about the two of us and how impossible we thought my parents were when we announced our feelings for each other. I told my dad in no uncertain terms how badly I wanted to marry you. Now history's repeating itself. Well, sort of. In my daughter. Amazing, isn't it? How I've been given the opportunity to view this situation from the perspective of a parent. I wonder who said God didn't have a sense of humor. 2000. Jillian's Journal. January 1st, 2000. For the first time in years, I stayed up past midnight to celebrate the new year. Lenny Jo insisted I should, and she was right. Like everyone else, I got caught up in all the hoopla surrounding the new millennium. Fortunately, the dreaded Y2K bug didn't turn into the disaster the experts had predicted. If the world's computers had crashed, some of them would not have been missed, especially the ones having to do with government. I'm beginning to sound cynical, but it's hard not to after the last year, during which the entire country was preoccupied with Clinton's affair. The impeachment process took months and millions of dollars, which could have been better spent. I blame Clinton for that waste. In fact, given his intellectual gifts, I consider much of his time in office a wasted opportunity. Good Republican that my father was, I imagine he's frothing at the mouth because of the corruption that's come out of the Clinton presidency. As for me, I've lost faith in both parties. New Year's Eve was an incredible experience in New York. Gary, Lenny Jo, and I had a late dinner, then sheer madness overtook us and we joined the throng in Times Square. I couldn't believe I agreed to do this, but I was just as excited as everyone else. Lenny Jo said we'd regretted our entire lives if we didn't go. Years from now, she wants me to be able to tell my grandchildren I was there to celebrate the big moment, when New York ushered out one millennium and welcomed in the next. How grateful I am that I could spend this New Year's with my daughter and Gary. I will admit that this is a wonderful time to be alive. When I think back over all I've seen in my 51 years, I stand amazed. I remember how thrilled my father was about the transistor radio. My great-aunt Jillian crossed the prairie in a covered wagon when she was just an infant, and before she died in the mid-60s, she flew in a jet plane. All of this in one lifetime. When Lenny Jo and I returned to the apartment, Gary wished us both a good night, and then my daughter and I sat up for another hour talking. Time for just the two of us is a rarity these days and much to be valued. My daughter is content and has been able to put the unhappy events of last year behind her. She loves her job as an assistant curator at Sotheby's. Lenny Jo has always had a deep appreciation of antiques, especially china and porcelain. This position is the perfect blend of history and beauty, of art and business. She has a trip to London scheduled this spring and wants me to tag along. She'll be meeting an associate in the London office with whom she obviously has a good working relationship. Her job has been a source of strength and pleasure during the turmoil in her personal life this past year. Paul broke her heart. It was inevitable. I saw how ill-suited they were early on in the relationship, but Lenny Jo had to discover this for herself. Difficult as it is to sit back and watch one's child suffer, there are certain life lessons that can only be taught by experience. I grieved with her, although I suspected from the beginning that Paul wasn't the right man for her. Soon, and I believe this with all my heart, she'll rush home to tell me she's met someone utterly wonderful who shares her interests and appreciates the woman she is. Lenny Jo's relationship with Paul led me to do some soul-searching about my first love. If Nick hadn't been killed, what would have become of our relationship? I couldn't help wondering if we would have eventually parted, like Lenny Jo and Paul. Somehow I couldn't make myself believe it. Even now, all these years later, Nick remains with me, a part of me. I love him so intensely that I've been unable to visit the Vietnam War Memorial. I just can't do it. But I've promised myself that one day I will. I'll be 52 on the 15th. My health is good, with no sign that the cancer is recurring. I get a shock every now and then when I happen to catch my reflection in a mirror. After the chemo, my hair grew in completely gray. Still, I've purposely left it that color, as a reminder of everything I've experienced. Actually, I think it gives me a dignified appearance. I'm well aware that I look very much the middle-aged woman I am. Gary likes it and compliments me often. Art takes up a good portion of my free time. Despite Lenny Jo's protestations to the contrary, I don't think I'm particularly talented, but I derive such pleasure from it that the question of my ability is irrelevant. My life has fallen into a set pattern. I'm reluctant to call it a routine. I rise early, do my reading and journal writing, then Leslie and I exchange emails. I still think of this communication via computer as an updated version of passing notes in class. I've come to find this internet thing completely fascinating, and often spend 1 or 2 hours browsing websites. Around 10 o'clock, Gary and I take a walk through Central Park. We have our own route and our own pace. This time is more an excuse to be together, but the exercise is beneficial nonetheless. I do volunteer work most afternoons. I've been a docent at several museums, and right now, I'm mentoring a teenage girl at risk. In the process, I've learned about facets of this city I never knew. Life in New York certainly isn't dull, but I shall enjoy my trip to London with Lenny Jo. Jillian Gordon. From Leslie Milton at FriendsNetwork.com to Jillian Gordon at FriendsNetwork.com. Sent January 1st, 2000. Subject: Happy New Year. Dearest Jillian, do you remember in high school when we talked about the year 2000? We tried to predict what we'd be like at the turn of the millennium. You thought we'd be wearing our hair in buns, walking with canes, and wearing black nun shoes. Remember those ugly heels that laced up? At 15, that was our view of anyone over age 30. Are you laughing yet? That isn't even close to describing either one of us. Without a doubt, this is the best time of my life. I'm blissfully happy and madly in love with my husband. When I look back through the years with Buck and then as a single mother, I shake my head in wonderment. Everything I endured, every challenge and difficulty that brought me to this point, was worth it. I didn't realize how miserable I was at the time because it took so much effort just to make it through the day. Everything has changed, and for the better. Our New Year's party with all the kids, grandkids, and everyone was hilarious fun. Between my four and Stephen's two daughters, we had a full house. At midnight, David and the boys lit fireworks. After the show, we closed the evening with a huge catered buffet. Frankly, I'm exhausted. I'll gladly wait another 1,000 years for a repeat of this celebration. I can't believe you were in the middle of all that madness in Times Square. Today is low-key. Stephen and I are both planning naps this afternoon. I'll check in with you later. Leslie. Globetrotters Travel. 225 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10010. Phone, 212-178-4521. Fax, 212-178-4522. Gordon, Lenny Joe. Page 1 of 3. CA 456-9071. INV 058497. Air, $348. Tax, $82. Total air, $430. TKT EO12104578. Itinerary receipt. Electronic ticket. Positive identification required at check-in. Request terms, conditions of travel, and carrier liability notices from travel agency or the transporting carrier. Restrictions. BA only, non-refundable penalty for charges. Issued by Globetrotters Travel, New York, New York. 17 March, 747. BA 178. Depart, New York, 9:05 p.m. Nonstop, seat 32C, class Q. Friday. 18 March, Saturday. Arrive, London, 9 a.m. Bags allowed, 3-piece. Arrive, Terminal H. Not valid for travel before 17 March, after 18 March. Globetrotters Travel. 225 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10010. Phone, 212-178-4521. Fax, 212-178-4522. Gordon, Jillian. Page 1 of 3. CA 456-9071. INV 058497. Air, $348. Tax, $82. Total air, $430. TKT, E01210457858. Itinerary receipt. Electronic ticket. Positive identification required at check-in. Request terms, conditions of travel, and carrier liability notices from travel agency or the transporting carrier. Restrictions. BA only, non-refundable penalty for charges. Issued by Globetrotters Travel, New York, New York. 17 March, 747, BA 178. Depart, New York, 9:05 p.m. Nonstop, seat 32B, class Q. Friday. 18 March, Saturday. Arrive, London, 9 a.m. Bags allowed, 3-piece. Arrive, Terminal H. Not valid for travel before 17 March, after 18 March. Jillian Lawton Gordon. 331 West End Avenue, Apartment 1020, New York, New York, 10023. March 15th, 2000. My dear Nikki Lynn, I wanted to get this in the mail before I left for England. I'm joining my daughter there for 3 weeks of relaxation, fun, and shopping. Inside the box is a small medal. It's something very special that I've waited all these years to give you. This medallion has a long Murphy family history. It first belonged to your grandmother, and she gave it to your Uncle Nick before she died. Years later, Nick gave it to me, and I wore it around my neck as a reminder of his love. I'd recently left for the East Coast and college and missed him terribly. He told me that whenever I got lonely, I should hold on to it and remember how much he loved me. I didn't remove it until the Army assigned his tour of duty in Vietnam. That was when I mailed the medal back to him and asked him to wear it. I prayed his mother's love and mine would protect him. When I learned he'd been killed, my grief was so great that I completely forgot about his mother's medallion. When I did remember it, I assumed it had been buried with him. Then in 1989, a friend of Nick's, a fellow soldier, contacted me. He had the medal. Apparently, Nick had asked Brad to return it to me if anything happened to him. For one reason and another, it took Brad 21 years to keep his promise. I have worn this medal close to my heart from that day forward. At 20, you're old enough to appreciate its history and its sentimental value. I'm convinced that the grandmother you never knew would want you to have it. I want it to be yours, too. Wear it with pride and my love. Your parents gave me one of the greatest honors of my life when they named you after Nick and me. I've had the pleasure of watching you grow into an accomplished and beautiful young woman. You have your whole life ahead of you. I know how proud your family is that you've chosen to become a teacher. Wherever life takes you and whatever you do, remember that you are deeply loved by your parents, by your Uncle Nick, and by me. Jillian Gordon. Leslie's Journal, April 15, 2000. I can't believe how much I miss Jillian. 3 weeks has never seemed so long. It would help if we'd been able to email the way we planned. I can't understand why anyone would be so heartless as to infect hundreds of thousands of computers with a virus, especially one that instantly aroused curiosity. Like lots of other people, Stephen and I fell prey to the I love you virus. Our whole computer system was destroyed, and we still aren't up and running. Jillian will be back in New York tomorrow morning. Judging by the postcard she sent, she's had a wonderful time. Or so she'd have me believe. I've known Jillian nearly her entire life, and something isn't right. I wish I could put my finger on what it is. My fear, of course, is a return of the cancer, but I refuse to dwell on that possibility. Stephen says I should fly out and see for myself, and I think I will. My friend might be able to fool others, even Lenny Jo, but she can't pretend with me. Lenny Jo's Journal, May 3rd, 2000. After 3 weeks away, it's marvelous to sleep in my own bed. Tired as I am from the flight out of Heathrow, my head is still buzzing. My heart, too. William Chadsworth is the reason. We've worked together for 14 months via fax and computer. The relationship was strictly business. For all I knew, he could have been a 60-year-old curator. Thankfully, he's not. I don't know what he felt when we first met, but the strangest, most wonderful sensation came over me. This was meant to be a working vacation for Mom and me. I did plan to do some sightseeing and shopping with her, but Will and I ended up spending every spare moment together. It's unsettling to think I could have fallen in love on such short acquaintance, but he's everything I've ever wanted in a man. I especially liked the way he treated my mother. I think she's half in love with him herself. He was so thoughtful and kind to both of us. Mom didn't fool me. Most nights she pleaded tiredness so Will and I could spend time alone. 3 weeks has never passed more quickly. He's 10 years older, but that doesn't bother me. Dad was 15 years older than Mom, and they had a wonderful marriage. I miss Will already, but if the 5 emails awaiting me once we reached home are any indication, he feels the same way. We both feel it's necessary to give this attraction a bit of time. Since he's in London and I'm in New York, that won't be a problem. Our plan is to communicate via the internet and by phone for the next 6 months, with the occasional visit when we can manage it. And then we'll see how we feel. That's the sane, sensible approach. I'm certainly in no rush to become involved again, especially after my breakup with Paul. Will could meet someone else. For that matter, I could too. Mother said there are advantages and disadvantages to long-distance relationships. Just now, I'm painfully aware of the disadvantages. He's already suggested he visit New York in July. That would be perfect. This time the meeting won't be work-related. I'm counting the days already. Mother liked Will immediately, and she's an excellent judge of character. She knew after meeting Paul just once that he wasn't the man for me, and she was so right. I'm not the only one having company this year. Aunt Leslie's booked a flight for the first part of October. Apparently, the trip's a birthday gift from Stephen. It will be so good to see her again. Jillian Gordon. From Leslie Milton at FriendsNetwork.com to Jillian Gordon at FriendsNetwork.com. Sent July 25th, 2000. Subject, my visit. Jillian, I'm planning my itinerary. What do you think of visiting Washington, D.C.? I've always wanted to see the Smithsonian and the Washington Monument. Are you ready to visit the Vietnam Memorial? Leslie. Leslie Milton,
From Jillian Gordon at friendsnetwork.com. 2. Leslie Milton at friendsnetwork.com. Sent July 26, 2000. Subject, your visit. Dearest Leslie, I'll be happy to visit Washington, D.C. if you want, but I'll skip the Vietnam Memorial this go-round.